which contributes for us maybe to take this matter very, very serious. First of all, it's the background which they gave us. The first presentation, it was in terms of the background. The background is stipulated that the Motor Vehicle Assurance Act started from 1942. I'll go to the commissions. And then 1965, there was this dispensation came to around, yes, by establishing that motor vehicles well. But where I'm coming to, also the commission, two commissions, 1954, the CODA Commission of Inquiry, and 1962, Duplessis Inquiry was established to see, to prove that this thing is so serious. I'll come to this one, which I wanted to highlight. You see, in the first presentation, acting DG spoke about the issue of inclusive. To me, this matter was very political, really. It was also political because it didn't include us. I'll quote the Fairfield Commission 1987, where only in 1997 they started to think about Abantu, about people from former Transkei, Botswana, Venda, and Siskei, TBVC. Now, here comes the challenge. By amalgamating some of these things, were some of these laws accommodating them as well? Because to amalgamate, that's something else. You can amalgamate, but without improving some of the laws. I think now is the stage of improving the laws of inclusive, including people. Because those former homelands were put there purposely. Most vulnerable people, most affected people, were mostly blacks, which were staying in the former homelands. That means we're not included. Even now, I think this law seeks to address those atrocities. And then you come to, well, I'll leave the Melmet Commission and also this one which we talk about. I'll go also to the input of today, whereby I think the purpose of the commission was to have a reasonable system and also an affordable system as well as sustainable system and also equitable system. And then, to me, we're still on the process to look about those things which were mentioned. Now, here comes the question. In terms of the theft, in the presentation, unfortunately, this document is so marvelous, but it doesn't have numbers. You spoke about the AFF, which is the Attorney's Fidelity Fund, which its purpose is to make sure or to protect people against the attorneys who are stealing money from them. My question, where are they getting their funds? Who is funding them? You know, I was looking, I'm not a racist, I'm very far from that thing, but you can see all the presentation. Where are the most vulnerable people? Yes, I will second any move that you must go to the most vulnerable people, because the people who had an advantage to come and present here are the people who have an advantage. And my worry, unfortunately, the acting DG is no more here. There was a statement whereby he indicated that most of the time once there is money coming in, there are people who are attaching. Therefore, it qualifies us that we must change the system, because there are people who think that they are always, they will still milking the Road Citizen Fund. We can't accept that one. And the chairperson, I was a little bit worried. There was an earlier on a proposal of involving Home Affairs. I don't have any problem about that one. But my worry, through the previous presentations, most of the issues, some of the presenters, their focal point was on social services, and then also on health, and then also on Home Affairs as well as Foreign Affairs, when they were speaking about refugees and like. Therefore, does it mean that we must also call them as well? I don't know. That is a question which they must be responded to. Because this stigma and their emphasis was about the issues not pertaining to transport, but was the issues pertaining to some of these departments which I'm talking about. And you see, to me, the issue of consistent in terms of Professor Klopper, I take it very serious. It's not a child's play. I'll remind my colleagues some of the issues. I don't know whether it's him, but I think it's him. When he referred about the issue of Syria versus the accidents in South Africa. You see, to me, that's why I said earlier on that some of the things to me are very political. I don't take them light. Very political. To me, when this response come as it is, it was not a surprise. But I'm questioning myself, why is it happened that is not consistent? Previously, he put this statement, but after he forwarded this statement against this proposal which we're making, which we're putting for. And in terms of politics, see, when you cross from Palestine, go across the river Jordan to Jordan, from Jordan going to Syria in Damascus, if you know it before, and if you can go after, the story can tell whether the statement was issued here was correct or wrong. There we are talking about ethnic cleansing. You can refer that matter as a joke about ethnic cleansing. That is my worry. Unfortunately, he is not here. And in that day also, I didn't want to go deeper to this, because some of these things are very sensitive on what is happening on the ground. Therefore, Chairperson, also, through you, another concern which came, which I'm requesting you to help us on, was the issue of rehab centers. That the rehab centers are not enough. And they were saying that rehab centers, they are also far from the people, of which is true. Some, they are very far from the people. And then how do we address that? And I'm happy to my colleagues when they are saying there are challenges, when they are accepting that with the RAF there are challenges. And the issue of the name, I'll be happy if you can name in my name. Mtikeni Sibande system, maybe. To me, as long as it going to improve the lives of the people, I'll support it. I'll repeat. As long as it going to improve the lives of the people, cutting the people who are milking it. Because I'm asking myself, if you do have any clue, why and how are these people are misusing this fund so much that they look, that if there's money and then they go and whatever. Because we are the legislatures. We are supposed to lobby from other colleagues in terms of the law. If that there is a law which is having some flaws, that law must be changed so that it must protect the people. And the chairperson, I was happy also when they gave the statistics about how this AFF, this money received from the interest, that shows that some people are not genuine. Myself, I'll prefer a person who is genuine when he's solving, because we need each other. We need to have an amicable solution to solve our problems, but not to have an approach where it's going to enrich me. I don't want to regret my term while I was in the office. I don't want to regret my term that I've done little or I've done nothing in order to save the people because of some friends who are there busy milking the rough system. And then, Chairperson, another reason to qualify my argument is the from the presentation as follows, that in terms of exclusion, is that the results that caused the accidents, faults in brackets, takes priority over the need of the healthy care and rehabilitation, trauma care and rehabilitative intervention. Such exclusion is incompatible with the concept of social security and does not contribute towards the equity and sustainability. Anybody who argues that, let him come and give us facts. Because if I recall very well, when they were doing presentation, we requested a lot of people, time and again, that if they see anything which is not constitutional, let them bring forward. And then here, it continue to say exclusion continue, you know, about some of the things which is affecting. Because the issue is inclusiveness. Why are we excluded? Why are we being used sometimes even to be an instrumental of imperialism? Why I'm saying that those people are benefiting with the money which is international instead of looking here the cause and the contribute, cause and the cons of the suffering of our people. Chairperson, if you go to, again, with the Sachwell Commission, I won't go into deep details on that one. I mean, the department was able to indicate to us some of the cases that we're taking for. I wanted to maybe a clarity if there is any case which is still pending. Because, and again, there was a gentleman which was making an example, which is the issue of Namibia. You see, to me, next time, don't make an example with Namibia, because there are a lot of similarities between us, Namibia and Angola. All those countries which were conquered by South Africa, there's no difference as such. To an extent, some people are still having a dual citizenship. So we can't get an experience exactly what we need. Therefore, I was going to recommend that next time it was going to be suitable if you get an example maybe from Canada or far, far, far away, a biggest country, nearly big like ourselves. Because if you make an example with Namibia, still you're making South Africa, it's a South African example, it's the same. Since we believe that some people are still having dual citizenship. And then we see a chairperson, I think that the little experience which I've got, I was in my constituents, I was partly involved. I saw some of the approach, which was done by the RAF itself, by trying to solve the problem of paying the people direct. Because the question still remains. I think another weakness from RAF was that no matter we have an AFF, but there is a clause or a law which protect the lawyers that tell us about that law so that you can talk to our colleagues and correct it. Because they want that money to be paid to them and put in their trust fund. And before it, for example, goes to Mr. De Clement, to Mr. Ramaklakan, that money, it will accumulate a lot of benefits. And when it goes to him, if it's 5 million was due to him, he'll get exactly 5 million. What about the interest? What about the interest of that money in that trust fund? And there is a technical thing which you must explain as well. You see, I don't think I'm not defending the department, but since there are this interaction, there is a thing which I've learned from the process, whereby, they wrote this and found it, administration, it took long. No, it might be took even short time. The issue is that some people, they take the money and keep it to them in their trust fund for a long time so that it can accumulate their benefit before they take it out. And then at the end, the finger is pointing who? You, as road accident fund. While we have done nothing, the money was paid long ago. I'll put an example. There is a case which I know. One little boy from my family passed on in Binoni, in Sizwe Madonsela. And then when he passed on, the uncle was given a task to be a principal for the family. And then the lawyers, what they've done, they went to the girlfriend who was pregnant by then and take her as a beneficiary without the acknowledgement with the next of kin. After a period when the next of kin looking for the benefits, they discovered that the man was already paid. We intervened and then we asked Rotex and the fund. You know what we found? They gave us everything, the details. When we went back, we asked the lady, have you received any money? He started to say no. At the end, I said, no, we'll call the police. Yes, I've got how much you got. He said, they gave me 35,000. But when we do the, when you check visa the paper, you know what happened? Approximately, Road Accident Fund paid already the lawyers, which was 11,000, if I'm not mistaken, and then paid the hospital, the money which was due to the hospital. The balance was 75,000 due to the claimant. But what the lady received, they took as well, they got the money which was paid to them, and also they took over the 40,000 they gave the lady because he was used. She was used. That's what the people, that's what they want. That's what they want, some of the people. So, if maybe you can take us on board to elaborate more with some of those things, because that is a bone of contention where that people are arguing so much that they don't want to move away from it. And then, before I come to the last one, to you, Chairperson, there was through your presentation, initially you said, before you spoke about 1.70 per liter of fuel, and then later you gave us the current fuel about 1.90. I'm subject for correction. You spoke about 1.70 and then after you gave us 1.90. All right. Chairperson, to you, you know what is happening? Very informal. Some people outside to fight the issue of the Roads Accident Fund, They don't tell people about the crude oil which we don't own. But they accuse the Road Accident Fund and the government that you are jawing money. This huge amount of fuel which you want doesn't go to whatever it's supposed to. That's how they mobilize people outside. So, may you please clarify it as well. Because my knowledge, my little knowledge is that if you put increase in the fuel, it touches a lot of things. South Africa never had crude oil, which can develop petrol and oil. We depend from people outside who are supposed to give us that crude oil and then we can make petrol. But people, they forget about those things. They only know what they know because they wanted to defend it. May you please also clarify it? Chairperson, let me leave it there. I don't want to go on and on because I was happy also. It is clear also, and I will take it my own about some of the arguments which
thank you very much. Can we get responses?
Chairperson, I'm going to start with the AFF. The scheme is, or the fund is funded through interest earned on trust funds and investment funds. So they invest some of that, and then they've got a policy in place, insurance, that deals with the claims. But indirectly, the funding comes from interest on trust funds, trust money. In terms of payment, a represented claimant, when the fund pays to the attorney is by law required to receive that payment in his trust account and deal with it from there on out. As regards to short payment, definitely there are instances where there is short payment by the attorney to the client. This has happened over many years. It's well known. It's well documented. In the presentation we had referred to, for instance, to the Constitutional Court matter where the certain segments from the legal fraternity argued that they should be able and continue, because it has already, it was a practice for very long, to continue to use so-called common law contingency fee agreements in terms of which they could agree with the claimant to charge any percentage of the compensation. There was no limit placed on that. I think in that instance, the agreement in dispute provided for 30%. I speak under correction. So subsequent to that judgment, there were still some of them who continued to have it. And I think in the Bobrov matter, for instance, he had various agreements signed by the claimant, not just one. And then he would decide in terms of when and what the settlement was, which one to apply. It happens, even on a 25% contingency fee agreement, you would find that the party and party cost, which is cost that usually in law goes to the claimant, is utilized to defray certain of the expenses. But there's still contingency fees deducted from the capital payment. So the claimant would never get the full settlement amount. There's a cost to using an attorney and an advocate and the medical practitioners, the various medical experts that get involved, and the actuary. Everyone has got a financial interest in the payments made by the RAF. The difference being that if you're a direct claimant and the fund instructs the actuary and the fund instructs the medical experts, and there's no litigation involved in the matter. Firstly, the fund saves because the overheads are less. The claimant receives 100% of the settlement amount directly paid to him, not into attorney's trust account. As regards the rehab centers, yes, it was good to see that there are a number of them across the country. It is correct that there may be challenges with access, but then if you look at the medical benefit provided to a beneficiary, it includes transport to receive a healthcare service. It includes accommodation. And even where you need a caregiver to accompany you, that is provided for in the benefit. As regards the fuel levy, and maybe Itai, you could come in here, but the fuel levy is set by the Minister of Finance once a year, or as and when circumstances become really dire. It's not impacted by exchange rates, which oil is. So what we receive is fixed. If oil prices, fuel prices at the pump go up, it doesn't equate to an increase in the fuel levy, which would flow to the RAF, and therefore we're better off. Our fuel levy is fixed. And in terms of the recent announcement, not so recent anymore, we're still waiting for that. It hasn't flowed to us yet. Yitai, do you want to add?
Yes, please. I'll just add a little bit through you, Chair. Thank you. Yes, so on the fuel levy, so the number, if I just, what I'm thinking, the first number, which is 169, which is the 170 cents, was referenced by Francois with respect to the current cost of the RIF scheme. And then the actual fuel levy that accrues to the RIF as of the 2017 financial year, that was 163 cents. And then the minister approved a 30 cents increase starting 1 April. That would then make the 193 cents. So 193 cents is effective 1 April, but as Chris indicated, it will only start getting to the RAF from July, because there is that 2 to 3 months delay between the time when the levy is collected by SARS through National Treasury and by the time it gets to the RIF. So from July onwards, our expectation is that we will be getting fuel levy indicating 193 cents per litre. Thank you.
Any other response? Honorable Sibande?
Thank you, Chairperson. What about the rehab centers? And then also to add one, may you please take us on board about this thing of no-fault system, because that's where a lot of people, they were arguing. And then third one, I've requested you maybe to help us, if maybe you can, about this actual, where is the problem about the issue of controlling the fund? Because I know that there is law which is protecting them, that some of this money, instead of being paid direct, because it must be optional. If I want a lawyer, yes, I would agree that the lawyer must take the money, whatever, but if I don't want, if it must come to me, because that's where it's a problem. A lot of people, they take little, while other people who disease was not even affected. I'll put an example. A few days ago, during the presentation, terrible pictures. I said earlier on, I'm not a racist, but black woman, terrible pictures were brought to us. That is a sign that most vulnerable is us. So if there is any law which will protect us, which maybe if we were supposed to make an amendment concurrently with this one, may you please highlight it for us, please. Thank you.
As regards rehab centers and access, the scheme provides a medical benefit that would entitle the beneficiary and enable the beneficiary to receive the rehabilitation at a center, maybe not where the person stays, but the transport and accommodation costs would be included in the benefit. Similar to what you have in terms of a reference hospital. Not all hospitals are able to treat every condition, but they could refer you to a more sophisticated, more capacitated referral hospital, and there you could receive treatment. The model is more or less the same. So from an access perspective, the benefit accommodates transport, accommodation, and everything required to receive the treatment. As regards the election of a claimant to receive the money directly where the attorney represents the claimant, that's in the, I'll go back in history, the fund tried to establish such a system many years ago. The challenge that we had is that the legal profession argued that we are interfering with the contractual relationship between the attorney and his client, in that the attorney mandates the client mandates the attorney to act for him, and consequently compensation is then paid via the legislation into his trust account, whereafter he accounts to the client. We wanted, or at that point in time wanted, to make a payment of the capital directly to the claimant, and party and party costs to the attorney. There was a legal challenge at that point in time in terms of the process followed, and it was stopped. We didn't pursue it. What we're now doing in terms of this bill, what is proposed, is direct payment. So it will be legislated that funds are received directly by the beneficiary, not by any intermediary. So that's what we want to achieve here. Sorry, I think that's all for now. Thanks.
Honourable members, are there still other questions, Honourable Banza?
Yes, Chair. I just want to get clarity on this issue of undocumented migrants. You proposed, if I can use the term that was used by my colleague, the innovation or invention, that in terms of the claim, you can just allow a period of 3 years for them, so that in that period, then they can go to Home Affairs, get the documentation in terms of their asylum application. Now, but what I want to check through you, Chair, what is the current situation now? Do you pay them now? Okay. So I would like to know what was the reason or the logic that made us to pay them now, and what now is the logic or the reason now that we are now recommending that we don't pay them? Because I think that's very critical. If you go to court, it's challenged, you must bring that rationality aspect of things. And so that we'll be sure that whatever decision we take, we are not shooting ourselves on the foot. But I've also asked earlier on, I think I didn't get a clear answer on that one. I said, should the whole bill be challenged to court? Are we confident that what we are proposing now will pass the test of time? Do we have a watertight argument? Because we don't want a repeat of the ETOLs, and where it's challenged, and then there's a lot of mobilization and all those things. Up to now, we're still sitting with the problem of ETOLs. Now, we want to satisfy ourselves so that we make sure that whatever we take as a way forward, we don't find ourselves in those ones. For now, I think I will stop there, Chair. It will depend on the responses that I get.
Thank you, Chair. So the difference between an undocumented person injured currently in the country and the RAF proposal is that currently your claim is a claim in law in delict. RAF proposes a new basis for the claim. They remove in total your common law right for a delictual claim to take place and substitute it with a social benefit scheme. And in a social benefit scheme, you can apply different rules. And in this regard, the Constitutional Court, in terms of the reference in the response, has indicated that with such schemes, you do not have to afford everyone in the country exactly the same benefits. So it's a legal issue. It's the difference between what we have currently as a common law right, where we do not differentiate based on residence. Everyone, for instance, Sosh, who's not a resident, would have a claim up to whatever he can prove in terms of the rules of the scheme. Under RAPS, there's no longer a common law delictual claim. It's now Social Security benefit provided. Because it's now a benefit scheme, the rules can be amended, and there is Constitutional Court precedent to say that not everyone has to get exactly the same benefits. It's also currently enforced in SASA. Legal. Oh, the constitutionality. Sorry. I can with reasonable certainty say that this bill, in whatever form, will be challenged. There is, it doesn't matter what the form. As long as the end result of the bill is that intermediaries will receive less, in whatever form, it will be challenged. The outcome of the challenge is difficult to determine because it's up to the Constitutional Court. But we are certain that at least there's precedent that supports what the bill is trying to achieve. And just to be clear, this same scenario played out in 2008, where similar arguments were made in terms of removing the common law right, removing general damages for non-serious injuries, in the dispute resolution mechanism that was implemented. Various challenges were brought by in respect of various items, and one of a number, only one succeeded. And that issue, in terms of the amendment bill, has been properly addressed under the RAPS bill, in that what is envisaged in terms of the medical benefit, in terms of benchmarking, is providing it at a level where private health insurance provides some of the best cover. So it's no longer uniform patient fee schedule, public health schedule rates that are provided. It's private health rates. So that constitutional gap in terms of the amendment bill has been addressed in this bill.
Honorable Ramatakana, you'll follow. Yeah. No, thanks very much, Chair. So your rationality in terms of the legal aspect is the social security system. Okay. I just want to check also, Chair, how do you identify these people that are undocumented as you pay them now? How do you know that it's so-and-so, it's a... Honorable Sibande, I just want to understand that how are they paying, how are they identified?
Currently, one of the requirements to submit a claim is to prove your identity. So in terms of the process under the RAF currently, you would say that I am the claimant or I am the injured represented by so-and-so, you provide your identity document or some form of identification. So if it isn't a passport number or an ID, it will come up. And in terms of what you're claiming, in terms of you'll have a residence, you'll lay some basis for your claim in terms of income loss. Your affidavit will state who you are, where you live. There's a number of documents that would advise the RAF who you are, what your status is. There's certain provision made in the claim forms as well. But then the RAF does an exercise what we refer to as proof of life. So we look at a database on MFS to ensure that the person is indeed alive, because sometimes you'll find fraudulent claims where they utilize the name or particulars of someone to lodge a claim. So there's various processes that would identify whether the person is alive or not. The resident status of the person. In terms of RAPS, one of the requirements would be for you to similarly to what currently is, to identify who you are. It will ask the questions in relation to what your resident status is. It will also, in terms of Section 45, I think it is in the bill, or 46, I speak under correction, there's provision made for the administrator to link with databases required to, amongst other things, verify identity, verify your status, are you alive or dead, similarly to deal with issues of fraud and also to deal with issues of administration. So there are those links that are in place existingly, which could be bettered, more specifically under RAPS, because we're going to have a statutory mandate that provides that access to the administrator for purposes of processing this legislation, and which is accommodated in POPI currently. One of the impediments that have been raised, not in these representations, but by certain other persons, is that the Protection of Personal Information Act would be an impediment. There are specific exclusions in that legislation that allows for an organ of state, in terms of properly performing its function, to process information of a personal nature.
Lastly, Chair, so don't you think that the last this one now that we are coming up could also be used as an argument in court as one of the rationalities over and above the social security system as a way of curbing potential fraud and corrupt activities, because there is a possibility with the current system under RAF. But what I'm hearing is that if you do away with this one, there are small chances in the RAFs for that corrupt activity, because now you're dealing with people who are properly documented, whereas with these ones, people are not documented, but they have to prove affidavits and all those things.
Chair, it, regardless of what the bill contains, and it does provide more powers to the administrator to deal with issues of verification, it definitely empowers the administrator. It will never, however, do away with fraud. There will always be fraud. But in terms of managing that fraud, the empowering provisions in the bill go much further than what we currently have. It does help. It does definitely assist, yes.
No, Chair, thank you very much. I'm now on my own because I was out for a while. I don't know whether my question has already been dealt with. But be that as it may, let me be on my own. I'll hear if you already answered the question. I think it's Section 27.4. The last time we had this debate was the had to do with the rights or the biological children somewhere in Zimbabwe and the father having been South African and they living in Zimbabwe, the fact that the rights for them in perpetuity would not necessarily stand in terms of the current bill. There was a long debate about why that it is not is a problem. Linked to that was the, which I think you dealt with earlier about the asylum seekers, that you were providing some middle road earlier on your proposition. But is it possible, Mr. Willemse, that you could provide, maybe if it's not now, maybe you can speak to it now, and then do a considered rationale on the exclusion. The exclusion around the very same clause that you have provided some middle road with 3 years rights to claim, but also more about the undocumented, the rationale of exclusion, because isn't it that also a required test when you deal with the exclusion? You have to provide the text and linking that with the social security system in the country. Is that possible that you, in your response and in a written one, there could be a more considered rationale that is presented to the committee?
Chair, yes, we can certainly submit a written rationale in that regard. But you also require a response at this time? Sure. So the Constitutional Court matter referred to in the response dealt with social development. The current legislative framework for social development provides for exclusion of certain categories of persons. The Concord in that matter indicated that it is not open for everyone in the country to benefit from social security provisions made in the country. So that from a Constitutional Court perspective, there's already confirmation that a system such as RAPS, which is no longer a delictual system, it is now a social benefit scheme, does not have to be open to everyone. So the middle ground proposed is, and I just need to clarify, it's open to this committee to decide whether it wants to consider the middle ground. The reason for proposing it is this, that if there is a challenge on the and a challenge to Section 27.4 on the basis that other departments, state departments, are not living up to their obligations to provide certain access, or they are not processing adequately, which then results in prejudice to a claimant in terms of accessing benefits under the RAPS dispensation. It just places, it puts the defense of the section in much better footing if you say that we're not timing your residence status at the time of the occurrence of the event, which is currently the clause, what the clause provides. So it's as of the date of injury, the accident or death. So at that point, if you're not, if your resident status isn't amongst those that are included, then you are excluded. So the middle ground now states that it removes that timing of determining what your status is from the date of accident or date of death, and it puts it at the prescription period. So you've got 3 years within which to lodge your claim. If at the time the claim is lodged, you are not, your status hasn't been resolved, there is no claim. So it, in that sense, a person who then finds himself in a predicament at the time of the accident has 3 years to take whatever legal recourse they require to force whoever to provide whatever service they require to do if it becomes necessary. So if that clause is then challenged, it places the defense of the clause on a much better footing.
Just a parting one. Mr. Valens, the case, since you're talking about the constitutional case, in relation to, earlier on you said it was amended RALPS Act and no longer RALPS is now benefit scheme, right? The question I'm asking, if you were to think like a lawyer and you want a watertight, and there are many lawyers in the room, they can also help you there. You want to have, what should we call this bill? Maybe if I summarize the question. So that you not open up for a legal challenge on the areas that are identified. Should we call it something amendment, or should we call it something that is linking to the sufficiently with a social benefit scheme in terms of the judge recommendation and the constitutional court judgment? You're welcome to say, but I think we would like to have a fairly informed opinion on that question.
Chair, the response there is, whatever you call the scheme is not what determines the nature of the scheme. If you remove fault is central to a delictual claim. So if it's a no-fault scheme, it's no longer a common law delictual claim. So you can call the scheme whatever you want. It would not matter from a legal perspective as regards to the nature of the scheme. So as long as fault is removed, it means it's no longer common law. It then becomes a benefit scheme. And the legal challenge would definitely not relate to the name of the scheme. It will deal with the issue of removal of fault, more specifically removal of a common law residual claim. To claim your residual damages against the wrongdoer, that's one aspect. The removal of the remainder of the general damages claim, that will be an aspect that will be challenged. The age limits and the annual average national income, those are the areas where the challenge will come. From the court's perspective, the court will look holistically at this and decide that whether the scheme achieves a legitimate government purpose in terms of making the scheme affordable, expanding access. There's a lot of requirements that the court will look at. But I someone else can respond as well.
Masha. Response for what? No one. Honorable, are you satisfied before I go to Honorable Sibanda?
Sorry, Chair, only one clarification. The issue of some of these responses, there is one specific which I wanted maybe you to help us with about an average annual national income benefit which does not allow for residual income which is higher. I'll put an example. We as members of Parliament, like next year, some will come back, some will not come back. In that case, what do we do? What is the status quo? Thank you.
Chair, the bill provides a flat deemed income for everyone who in the previous 3 years preceding the road accident was not employed or is at the time not employed. If in the previous 3 years prior to the road accident you were employed, you get the benefit of the highest income over that period as a basis of the calculation. Unfortunately, everyone else, as the bill provides, who has not been employment for the previous 3 years or is not employed, is a student or a scholar, gets, or the benefits are calculated based on the average annual national income. It serves as a safety net, a minimum safety net. You could also have instances for, you could also have instances of persons that are very well off, who earn a lot from assets that are actively working for them, who would also default to this minimum level, even though the earnings is a lot more. So what it does, it provides a minimum safety security net. It is not going to compensate you for your residual income. That's the difference between a delictual scheme and a social security benefit scheme. It's not intended to replace what you've lost. It addresses a need as opposed to a loss.
It was a small additional question that fell out in the cracks. The question, I think, Mr. Belm, so you did say that currently you verify the person that lodged a claim with the fund. Now, the question that you were supposed to help us to understand is the how part. You can verify a person who has a document, who's documented. What do you then do with the undocumented people in terms of verification? And then what then end up in the payments part of it? Is it the payment limited to the medical only, or it goes beyond that? Let's say the case hypothetically that this one is undocumented. What do you then? How do you then verify that?
Sorry, I you went in, so I did respond to this. So I'll just repeat it. And some may say, so under the RAF dispensation currently, we have got access to Home Affairs data, for instance. We need that access because, one, we need to verify that the claimant is indeed where he or she says he is and that they're actually alive, because we have got a lot of fraud in terms of fraudulent claims coming in on deceased persons. Under RAPS, the bill provides for more extensive provisions for the administrator to link up with other organs of state that have this information in place, so which we don't currently have. In terms of what's envisaged, the system would have these links you'll be able to verify independently from Home Affairs database, from certain hospital databases, from SAPS and from RTMMC. There's various databases. You can establish whether this person is who he says he is in terms of what they have, whether they were involved in an accident, what their status is, are they alive, are they dead, but also in terms of your lodgement criteria. You're going to verify your claim form, for instance, as a practical example, would require the person to put in an identifying number. So that will be an ID number, a passport number, some number that identifies where is your residence, so are you a citizen or are you not. There are certain questions that will obviously have to be checked against these databases, but they are practicalities, and that's why you need forms. And that's why forms are prescribed for all of these claims, to get that information, to make a call, establish what category the person falls into. So if he's undocumented, he or she, initially, they'll receive the emergency medical treatment. If the claim is not prescribed, and they then verify their status and they fall within one of the other categories, then they claim the balance. But the administrator, as we've said all along, also has an obligation to assist these claimants. So they're not left to their own devices. I mean, in terms of this, and that's why there's provisions made in the bill for this access to other organs of state to provide us with the information, to facilitate quick decisions in terms of whether you must pay or not. So it is there, and I mean, if the claimant does have the paperwork, they'll certainly provide it. If they don't, there's means and measures in terms of accessing the information from these other departments to establish whether they're aware of the person, what their status is, and then to make the determination as to what benefit they qualify for. And then there's the mid-clause where you would potentially have to tell someone that as of today, this is the benefit you qualify for. Your balance of claim prescribes at a certain point in time. You need to go and take action and remedy your status in a country, failing which this is all you get.
Your test is for someone to be able to say, I'm proving my status, in the event that the status is not proven, in other words, this person is illegal, then basically that falls away. The issue about the claim except only the medical, the emergency medication. Is that the case?
Yes. The bill provides one benefit to someone who's in the country illegally, and that's emergency medical treatment. So if you do not meet the requirement of status, that's all you're going to get.
Does RAF pay the illegal immigrants currently?
Yes, we pay the full claim. The difference being, the reason again, I'm emphasizing that. We're currently paying the full claim because status has nothing to do with your delictual claim. Under the RAFS dispensation, it's no longer a common law delictual claim, it's now a social benefit scheme. And therefore the rules provide that we provide limited benefits.
Honorable Kako?
Thanks, Chair. Bear with me if the question was asked before. Chair, that's just one thing. If this bill can become law next week, what will happen to claims that have already been submitted by? Will they be paid under the previous act or the current one? Now that the scheme is saturated now, what will happen to those claims, previous claims? Thank you.
Honourable Chair, there's a transitional provision provided for in the bill. Everyone who meets with a road accident, let's say today, their rights vest in terms of the law today. So if RABS came into effect tomorrow, all claims that happen until 12 o'clock tonight will be finalised by the new administrator in terms of the current law until those claims have all been dealt with. So if RABS comes into effect, it will administer two parallel systems. It will run off the existing claims that arose before the new act came into effect, and then deal with new accidents under the new dispensation. It's not something that's strange. You must, under the current law, under the current RAF Act, there's provision for us to deal with claims that arose under the MMF even still. There's claims that we are managing prior to the recent amendment that came into effect in 2008, where certain claimants have full claims for general damages, for instance. So there are various dispensations managed already. This will be just another one that moves into RAPS, and the existing claims will be dealt with in terms of the current rules and processes and the current law. RAPS claims will be dealt with in terms of the new law. But everything in existence as at the point in time when the new act comes into effect will be dealt with in terms of the law that applied prior to this act coming into force.
Honorable Panza.
Yes, Chair. This issue is very, very sensitive, very dicey. This of undocumented people, and I think we need to find a common understanding on it. You see, these people, they come here, they pay rent, they when they buy, they pay VAT, all the taxes that are associated with indirect taxes. Now, I just want to check, what's your view on the opt-out option? That they don't claim directly to the reps, but they claim direct to the one who has caused the accident, the opt-out option. What is your view on that one?
Okay, so the opt-out option would then mean that we retain the common law right for certain claimants who are injured by road accidents. That would create a constitutional issue.
Mr. Willems, can you write to the committee the question of undocumented? Because definitely you can see the concerns. If it's doable, that you are able to elaborate what is happening with RAF, undocumented, who are given full, and also what RAPS will be doing, and look at the laws which actually governs both to be acting the way RAF is acting and the way you anticipate RAPS to be acting in this regard. We will really appreciate, because members of the committee are very concerned with this approach. From where I'm seated, I come into the country 3 days down the line. I don't even have employment. I don't have proper documents. I get involved in an accident, then I get paid over R1 million. What informs that? And on the flip side of the coin is, I've been in the country wanting to get a proper documentation. It's almost a year. I'm working here, earning a living, and kaboom, I get involved in an accident. The only thing that will happen will be medical. If I need rehabilitation, I will not be entitled to that. Is that what you're saying? There will be rehabilitation to that effect. And because now I'm unable to work and get the benefit, the only thing will be I'll have to wait until such time that I've got proper documents to be able to claim from the benefit scheme. Is that what is being said? What informs that? That's what I'm requesting you to can really elaborate in a written form.
We'll do it, Chair.
I just want to establish with members, what will be our view? Do we believe that this bill is desirable? If it is, then it means we will have to take a decision. We will have to take a decision around that so that we will be able to know our way forward. Honorable Ramataka.
No, Chair. Thank you very much for the to try and answer your question. There's a short answer and there's also a long answer. But Let me give you the short answer. With the presentation that has taken place over the last 2 weeks, both in terms of the sectors, the people who deal with it as either the professional side, as well as the presentation and the responses from the department today, together with actuaries, I think it confirms the desirability of this particular bill. So yes, Chair, I think that it is a desirable.
Honorable Hunsinger, Honorable Mpanza will follow later.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there is no question that intervention is necessary with the Road Accident Fund.
Are you doing long or short?
Can I continue, Chair? However, in terms of what was presented here today, in terms of the RAPS bill being then in its current form, although I would still maintain that there was indications of certain options in considering changes to it, although I also understood what Mr. Willemsen now explained as the distinction between the common law, the Lixil claim, and social benefit scheme, and the no-fault status within those two very clear categories. I still have a huge concern around the affordability of the road accident benefit scheme. As what was indicated here, that we cannot be convinced about the calculations, and we do acknowledge the difficulty around that, in that it was based on estimates and a number of assumptions, which is typical of a projection. But then it's complicated in a very basic sense, in that it's not calculated up to its full implication, referring to the fact that it's highly health institution dependent, and the fact that we would have two concurrent schemes running next to each other without any clear calculation around the cost of that. So there's a lot of assumptions still, and therefore, you know, certainty cannot be provided in terms of the real cost of the scheme, and I have a serious concern about the affordability of the RAP scheme, and therefore I want you to know that I think the discussion has to continue, the debate has to continue, and I would plead then for a solution-focused thinking around other options, since I do maintain that RAPS is not the only solution, but a solution. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member, does it in essence say you don't necessarily agree with the proposed desirability by Honourable Ramatlakane? Because your proposal says we should still do further work.
Definitely further work. I am all for the process going forward, subject to an openness for solution orientated input. I mean, RAF is suffering, and we can't be ignorant about that. So absolutely, intervention is needed. But RAPS in its current form is not the intervention.
Panza.
Yeah, Chair. No, taking into account that this is work in progress, and also the fact that has been emphasized earlier on, that in whatever form this bill could take, it will be anyway, like any other bills, be challenged in court. So that one should not then stop us doing the work, so it's desirable that we proceed. I second my...
Thank you, honourable members. Let me just maybe check before I read the motion of desirability. Is indeed that having listened to all the sides of the story, we shall have to go to the provinces. We shall have to do the clause by clause to check as to whether. I'm just talking to what Honorable Humsinga has indicated. Somewhere we will have to do work on our own to make sure that the gaps that we are identifying as honorable members are plugged in. That's what I wanted to say before I read the motion of desirability. Will that be able to satisfy all of us if we do it that way? Silence is golden. Thank you very much. Motion on of desirability on the Road Accident Benefit Scheme B17 of 2017. That in the opinion of the portfolio of the committee, legislation is desirable. Bullet 1, to provide social security scheme for the victims of the road accident. Bullet 2, to establish road accident benefit scheme to administer and implement the scheme. The third bullet, to provide a set of definite benefits on a no-fault basis to persons for bodily injury or death caused by or arising from the road accidents. The fourth bullet, to exclude liability of certain persons otherwise liable for damages in terms of the common law. The last bullet, to provide for matters connected therewith. And the bill referred to the committee to be taken as a basis. Any mover for the motion? Honorable Humsinga?
Jay, it's not a mover of anything. I'm a mover of many things. Jay, can I ask whether we could postpone this decision subject to consultation with our caucus? And I plead for guidance from my caucus around this particular decision. Since I also didn't have the opportunity to consult because I wasn't aware that this motion would be moved here and now.
There's a proposal that we go back to our principals and our parties so that we can be able to get a view. Honorable Ramatlakana, Honorable Mpanza.
Chair, sympathetic to the request, but in my thinking about it, the desirability of the bill in it does not necessarily exclude the detailed influence that still has to take place that Honorable was talking about when he was saying it's a solution, not the solution. So it doesn't necessarily exclude that. It's just a simple basis for us to continue to do, because for us to be able to finalize the program to go into constituent provinces, we must cross this bridge. Otherwise, we'll be going crossing the bridge without having decided whether there is any desirability on the bill, which may create another problem. Why are we doing it if we have not answered that question? So I would try to persuade the honourable member that I think we can note that in that motion there was an issue of lack of consultation, not opposition, but that a further consultation were required in the context of honourable Humsinga. But that we don't postpone necessarily the motion,
But we're in the minutes we provide so that at least there is that clarity.
Are you therefore moving?
I'm moving, Chair.
Honourable Mpanza?
Chair, I second.
Honourable Humsinga, Honourable Sibande? Honourable Humsinga?
Chair, is it done now? Because I still wanted to comment after the suggestion by my colleague here.
You want to comment, you're allowed, Honourable Member.
Is this still pre-approval phase or has it been approved now as desirable?
Both Honourable Ramatlakana has said that this is work in motion. He therefore moved that the bill be... the motion of desirability be accepted.
Can I propose an amendment to the motion?
You're allowed, Honourable Member.
I'm quite comfortable to go ahead, Chair, and I appreciate the committee's indulgence, since I know that I'm totally outnumbered here and that they can take a vote on this, so I appreciate the indulgence. I basically have an issue with the two features in the motion, which I then ask for your consideration, committee, and that is the principle of no fault and common law being part of the motion. In principle, I don't have a problem in going ahead with a motion. In principle and even through the process, I do have a problem with those two elements being part of the acceptance at this stage.
Honourable Humsinga, basically what we have done here was to extract some key issues from the objects of the bill. The object of the bill indicates the no fault and the common law issues. That is how it is conjured. So it's going to be very difficult. Is it possible that you can quickly give members this so that I don't read while they don't have nothing? Just around the corner. So basically that is where we are coming from. Honorable Sibande, you had your hand up?
No, Chair, I think I'm partially covered because I wanted maybe to indicate to my colleague that I believe by allowing us to go ahead is part of consultation, because all of us, we were concerned about the consultation, but if we said no, that means we can't go and consult. And the key fundamental question which we must ask, whom are we representing? Because I don't think that it is a crime to go and consult the people whom we are representing. As I alluded earlier on, that there are a lot of people who came, who had an opportunity to come here and present, but there are people who didn't have a capacity to come and present to us. So it's us who are supposed to go to them. So I was just supporting my colleagues that we must go to the people. Thank you.
Honourable Maramatlakane.
Speak before him because I think this is his proposal. I want to comment on his proposal. Now, Chair, what I thought we could say, which I think is recorded, that the desirability of the legislation is a total package. Because and it's not equal agreeing with the clause, each one of those clause. It's not. This is just so that we are able to get to the next step. The Honourable Humsinga has got, and it's recorded, that these particular bullet points that he has mentioned, he reserves his rights on that because he doesn't quite agree with that, which is still going to be an input that he's going to be making when we get into the detail of the bill. Yeah, those two. So I think the way out of it is just to simply record that view of the, that he doesn't quite agree, record that, because that's going to be part and parcel of the process going forward, and that he will be able to. So we must not create an impression that we're tying him in the bill that is not even before clause by clause discussed. So I think that's just all I wanted to explain, so that when he goes to caucus, he can pull a minute of these to say that in that particular one, there was a voice that we don't necessarily, we're reserving the right on this particular question, there's no mandate, but in terms of us moving forward as a committee, and that issue is still going to be lots of debate about it when we deal with the Act and when we visit the provinces. So I thought I must just speak before him, so that he doesn't get the impression that he's boxed into a corner. He's quite latitude. He still has that.
Taken. Honorable Humsinga.
Chair, I quite understand everything, and after 4 years with the committee, I think that's a given in terms of the relationships that we've established here and the way that we've commenced with our work. I do have a problem in accepting two of the bullet points in this clause, specifically the one around common law and the one around no fault. So if we can waive those two, I'm happy to go ahead. But I cannot accept the principle of a need incorporating those two principles, because that then excludes any argument around any of those two bullet points. So, I mean, I'm also experienced enough to know what it means accepting a motion with particular bullet points. I therefore beg this committee to consider removing bullet point 3 and bullet point 4 for the purposes of moving this particular motion, because I'm all in favor of this motion being moved and the process to continue, but not on the premise that these two principles are accepted unconditionally.
Honorable Mpanza, I thought that when Honorable Ramatlakane had spoken, he was giving us a direction to note the concerns as raised by Honorable Humsinga on bullet 3 and bullet 4. That let's note the dissenting voice that is coming from Honorable Humsinga, and it shall be so noted. Honorable Mpanza? Okay. Then, honourable members, having agreed to the motion of desirability, it should have been printed also. We shall have to do hearings in all the 9 provinces, starting from the 24th. Of July. I'll quickly request to get copies so that we will be talking from an informed position, that if we do 2 days, because that is what we are proposing, that we will have to do 2 days in each province starting from the 24th of July. Will that I'm just thinking out loud that probably when we do that, it means by August we would have finished, then we can come and sit down and make a reflection on what we have found in provinces. So the proposal is that the last week of June up to the first week of August, that we go to all the 9 provinces. You will be getting the proposal. Will that be fine with honourable members? Honourable July. I'm saying July.
July.
Yeah.
Starting in July, Chair?
We're starting in July. Yes. The 24th, 25th of July, if we can be able to look into that, then it will take us the whole of August, probably the second week of September. That's when we will be able to finish. But the document is coming for your information and diarizing. We will be, the proposals is to the effect that the 24th and the 25th of July we will be in Tshwane and then Sidibeng. The 26th and the 27th of July we will be in Sekhukhune and Limpopo. Lydenburg is not in Limpopo. This should be corrected. Lydenburg is in Mpumalanga. Let it be corrected, and then they should be able to indicate which town in Waterberg will be. I know the towns by head and heart. The first week of July, that's the last day of July and the first day of August, we will be in Gertsibande in Carolina, and then in Kangala in Belfast. The second, the 3rd of August, we will be in Northwest, in Freiburg, and in Brits. The 7th, the 8th of August, we will be in Free State, Lijwelibutswa, and Thaba Mofutsanyane, Lijwelibutswa will be in Welkom, and then we will be in Bethlehem. In the 9th and the 10th, we will be in Aliwal North, that is the Eastern Cape, and Credoc in Krisani District Municipality. We proposing that on the 14th and the 15th of August, we be in Port Shepstone and Ladysmith. Then the 24th, the 25th of August, Breda Valley in Worcester and in Beaufort West. That's the Central Karoo District Municipality. The 12th and the 11th and the 12th of September, which will be the last public hearings in Kuruman and in DR in the Northern Cape. Honorable members, looking at that, probably you should be able to guide to say it's workable when we do it like this, it's not workable when we do it like this. Honorable Teko, Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Ramatlaka.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. As I'm looking, Chair, at the proposed dates and venues, I have nothing against the dates, but I have a concern around the choice of the two districts in the Eastern Cape. The two districts are nearer each other, leaving the other four districts and the two metros on the other side. If it is a proposal, it would be better if the proposers may relook at the issue. If you talk of the district Chokabi and the district of Krisani, those are two districts nearer each other on the same corner there, leaving the greater population of the Eastern Cape. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Member, what are you suggesting? Maybe if you can come up with a proposal which will be able to assist us.
Yes, Chair. I can recommend that we take either Alfred Nzo and O.R. Tambo. You can have Krisani then. But those two districts, if you know the geography there, are across the Kai. There's no one at the... Let's propose Buffalo City and Krisani. Yes, that can be better that way, Chairperson. Buffalo City and Krisani. because Buffalo City can accommodate three districts. It's a bit central, and then we have Christiane on that side.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
In Christiane, is it fine if you go to Craddock?
Craddock, you can have Craddock in Christiane, Chair.
The place
should be Queenstown. Queenstown better.
Better in Queenstown.
Yes, Chair.
Honorable Omolomo Ipulele, those who don't have members in this portfolio committee, because I can see even Mpumalanga is raising the hand. Honorable, you want us to go to Msunduzi, I can see.
No, Chair, not because of that. But I'm just coming with the logic also.
Okay.
Yes, I think Ugo can remain. Yes. And then I then propose Umgungundlov. It's Peter Marisberg, yes. But Umgungundlov is a district. It's not Umsundu, it's just a locality. Because there you also have the capital city of the province. So, and it's central. Even people from Ladysmith, they can come at that side.
District municipality of Umgungundlov,
yes.
And then the town...
The town of Msunduzi.
Msunduzi?
Yes.
I knew it.
No. and Chair, I also want to check in terms of the how flexible is the program in terms of attending. But maybe that might be an internal thing. If there are prior arrangements in terms of structures, is there a flexibility? We all have to go there. Would love to. Yeah. But Chair, so Ikuluma now, we are Zamayama responsible.
We all have to be there. Honorable Ramatlakane.
No, Chair, I wanted to talk about the Western Cape. If we maybe have to change, because if you're saying Worcester and Beaufort West is a one line, it's on the one N1, we don't deal with N2. So rather if you say we want to go to the N1, maybe it's important either you go to the N2, either, because here you have the biggest place out of Cape Town, or the next one will be George, and then on the N1. So I would think that, and George is more central to the Southern Cape if you do it with George, because you can then deal with the Plattenberg Bay, Knysna, Mossel Bay. Those towns are quite close together, and also, so I would propose that instead of Beaufort West, we'd rather do the Southern Cape. In this case, George becomes the area, the town.
And then should move
Beaufort West.
We remove Beaufort West and put
George
and leave Worcester.
Yes.
As it is.
It's central. Beaufort West can come there.
Okay. That's the proposal for Western Cape. Is there somebody who knows the Northern Cape so that they are able to guide us? The two districts that we have taken. DR and Kurman. Honorable Ramatlakane.
I think Kimberley is the one important part.
Uh-huh.
Central. Then you can either do Kuruman, which is about
quite strange driving to get there. Or you can do the postman's backside.
You want to assist?
Chair, a number of times I think we've had policy consultations on learner transport and a whole lot of these things which we've done in the department. Our experience in the Northern Cape is that initially we'll go to Kimberley, but then the stakeholders now and then will complain and say, look, if you look at the geographic location of Northern Cape, it's 400 kilometers apart from each other. So the advice we got, which we implemented, is that you go to Kuruman, DR, Springbok, and Kimberley, the four. And we've since implemented like that, and it worked. So we don't know it in terms of parliament.
If we were to take two, which ones would you prefer us to take?
Well, there is the ones which is on the northern side and the other ones which leans more to the N1 side. They are far apart. Yeah. Because you also still have Kimberley, which is the center. You still need to go the one way or the other.
If you can be very specific with the proposal to say we go to DR, we go to Kimberley, or we go to Springbok and DR, if you can be specific.
I'll propose probably Kimberley, Kuruman, and two. Oh.
If you were to, and I didn't want to raise up in there, because it's another end of the Northern Cape. I think if we can't do DR and Kuruma, if you look at in terms of the population, I think Kuruma is slightly bigger than DR currently. So you would probably go to Kuruma, do Kuruma if that's only the two, and do Kimberley, and then you leave up in ten out. But if you were to do three, in terms of the, you do up in ten, at least you can fly to up in ten from Cape Town, still can fly, and then do Kimberley en route, or do first Kuruman and then Kimberley. It is a bit of a stretch.
Proposal is that we do Kimberley and Kuruman. Oh, okay. Okay, not Upington and whatever. Okay, Kimberley, Kuruman. Ntate Ambassador.
Kimberley and Kuruman are on the same side of the geography, although the problem is the distance between them. If you are going to go southernmost part of the Northern Cape, you'd have to look at Port Calvinia, and Kimberley would be your best bet. Although, you know, in the ideal situation, you'd have had to take three areas in the Northern Cape, really, if you were to really do justice, because they are vast. They are very vast, you know, those areas. It would still not be like you would have done the other provinces if you do those two. But Calvinia and Kimberley would be the best.
What is the population in Calvinia? You're not sure?
I'm not sure. Just looking at the areas.
The villages around Calvinia? Didingatanyana? Okay. K
Can we establish from the Department of Transport when you were doing consultations, where did you go?
Chair, we went to Kuruman, went to Kimberley, went to Springbok, went to TR. And Upington, yes.
Those were the five towns. You didn't go to Kalfinia. It switched on again.
As we came from Springbok going to DR, we then passed there. So we didn't go to Kalvinia.
Honourable members, Honourable Hunsinga.
Jay, on your question, Kalvinia has 8,032 people. Sorry, 33. There was just one born.
The accessibility, I think with the Northern Cape, part of the things that we should be able to consider is, as we check these towns, will we be able to move from one area to the other? The proposal is that we do Kimberley and we do Kalvinia. Can we... What is the honourable member's take in this regard? Or you want to come with other proposals? Whilst we are still thinking about the Northern Cape, Mpumalanga.
Chairperson. In Mpumalanga, I think the drafters of this, they didn't check about the population, that is number one. And Belfast is very close to Carolina, very close to each other. While the population, normally if we approach in Mpumalanga, we look at the areas which seems to be center, which can bring a lot of people closer to each other. Therefore, I will propose that in Gert Sibande, we have two options. We can take it to Petritif, or Fish Free Center. No, I'm coming. I'm coming. Angithi nifuna abantu. Nifuna abantu. I public hearing, angithi. I'll leave it to you. If you need her, I'll leave it. And you mustn't forget that in Mpumalanga was...
In Gert Sibande, you are proposing Petritif.
No, I'm coming.
Okay.
I'm coming. Oh, Mangabe Siago, Pansbo, but plus, still is a Gert. The population is like Buntlazache. Still is a Gert. Or else... The second in Omsindo, Glamalanga, is right now, you center. Yeah, not in Omsindo. Still in Gert, ma. Yeah, we can look at... yes, but if Bad Plaza, you know, we say Bad Plaza. If you say, Ibolguatin, Luwatin. Ilwatini ikusenta ifana nama rural areas bo Bushbuck region alike. Population is very big, ku dense lapho. Mangabe kuse Bad Plaza. And then bese uthi enkangala. Enkangala nayo is very vast. You talk about the former KwaNdebele school. And the former KwaNdebele nayo is divided. It can be KwaMhlanga, can be Siyabuswa. Or else, ungayibeka a Witbank, or a Witbank. Ngoba nawuthi eBelfast, eBelfast is le ngokukhona towards Waterfallbova, it's towards Nelspruitvale. Either ingaba se Witbank or a Middelburg. The population is right.
Let's put it in Witbank. If we are to be in Kangala, we can put it in Witbank. If we go to Kwamhlanga, it will also give us an opportunity to look at the Moloto Road.
The ball is in your court.
Yeah?
The ball is in your
court. No, the ball is in your court.
In Kangala, in the Witbank, still the pass in Kangala.
It's in Kangala. Witbank is in Kangala district.
District.
And Elukwatini in Bad Plus is in Kertsibande. I would make a proposal that in Limpopo it's good to go to Skukuni district in Jane Fairs, not Ladenburg. We can go to Jane Fairs or we go to Duwatse, one of the, but Jane Fairs will be ideal. And then they say Waterberg, Lephalale. I would make a proposal that having dealt with Waterberg and Sikukuni is one and the same area, we need to go further north. We would go to Vembe district. If we take it to Vembe district, we can go to you want to go to Vuani is fine. Lebua Khomu is within the district near Capricorn. It's not far from Sikukuni. If you go from Lebua Khomu to Jane Fairs, it's less than 70 k's. And also if you take Lephalale and Jane Fairs, it's almost 100 and something k's. So you would have captured one part of the province, whereas if you take it to Vembe district or you take it to Mupani district, you can go to Giani. Vembe district, you've got Toyando, you've got Ilim Hospital, you've got behind the mountains, Giani will be better. Okay? That will be Mupani district, Giani. Let's look at Tshwane and Sidibeng. Mamelodi and Vereeniging. Mamelodi is in the eastern part of Gauteng. I don't know. Vereeniging is east, southeastern. Yeah, it's southeastern also. Maybe we should consider taking the east, and it's probably northeast of the province. That is Mamelodi. And then let's look at southwest.
Okay. Yes, and
then and those mining towns in the west. Those are different. Okay. Pretoria site is Mamelodi. Or we move it to Mamelodi, we take it to Hammanskraal. I'm just thinking out loud. We take it from Mamelodi, we take it to Hammanskraal or Mabopane.
But che.
And then we take it, I get it will be like this. Now when we take it to Mabopane, it's kind of northwestern townships of Pretoria. And then you take it to Vereeniging, is a southeastern Johannesburg kind of a thing. We need to be able to capture as much as we can.
Okay.
Honorable Mpanza.
So because these are two extremes, are we not considering the central, the internal ones?
which is your Johannesburg and your Hurling. Because this one are outer, the Mamelodi and the City Bank. And then you've got these internal ones. So I don't know what is our criteria. A lot of population there in the, either Johannesburg or Hurling.
Members, Honorable Robert Kakan, you know, I'm just thinking out loud.
Why don't we... Don't get around Soweto. We just go to Johannesburg and we tackle, so we go to Soweto.
Soweto. Mm. Yeah, in fact, I was looking at the time slots from 10 to 13 hours. Is how many hours? 3 hours. What stops us, because Johannesburg is close by, the areas are close to one another, what stops us from even doing a 5 o'clock when people come from work? We do a 5 o'clock one, probably maybe in Soweto or wherever, then we'll be able to do 3 and also take consideration of Western Cape probably. Where we can, we should be able to maximize the areas that we visit.
Northern Cape, Chair.
It needs 3 days.
Northern Cape is need, but I think geography, we need to consider the distances between the places we go in. Well, for example, we have Calphurnia as one point that we've suggested. And Calphurnia, I think, is in the border of Western Cape and Northern Cape. It's just... Actually, from Kimberley, it's the furthest from Kimberley to get there, but it's closer to drive to Calphurnia from here. But from Kimberley is a whole day. So is that what we want to do? I think that perhaps we should think about... If we want to do Calphurnia, we can then say maybe take the hearing to Friedendal. Friedendal, which is perhaps in less than, it's closer to Calphurnia, or when you're in Friedendal. But it's 360 kilometers from Cape Town. And then it's lesser to Calphurnia. So you are close by if you're in Calphurnia.
Honorable member, you were suggesting that we can leave from here to Calphurnia and then back take a flight to Kimberley.
Yeah, I was saying that even if you do it at Friedendal, it's like, almost like a border. You'll be able to get Calphurnia to get to that one central place. Then you're dealing with the furthest...
Friedendal is in the Western Cape?
It's in the border, yeah, it's in the Western Cape. It's almost the border to get into the Northern Cape.
Okay. So you are proposing that we do it in Friedendal,
and then
instead of Calphurnia.
But we will be doing the Western Cape. It will sound like we are on this side of the border, not in Northern Cape, even though they are close together. What I was just saying, it's easier to get to Calphurnia from here. It's quicker than to get the whole day driving from the Kimberley to Calphurnia. You can do that, come back, and then fly. Do the hearing in Calphurnia and then come back. And then that's what I'm suggesting. If that is what is 8,000 people that we're talking about.
Okay. I thought that maybe you were even going to propose the third day.
The third day I was going to suggest, Chair, because the committee will be here and at September most of the time will be here, we should be able to take one day to do the CBD of Cape Town. A central place that can also capture the working class area. I'm not suggesting CBD. I'm suggesting outside in the big centers, we may have to think about a place that can bring Mitchell's Plain, Khayelitsha, Guguletu in one place. In that case, you can do Owar Tambo as a central place on the N1, on the N2.
I wanted to come to North bokoni bo phiri Freiberg le Brits khakala khakala
ke it's east and west. Yes,
east and northwest.
It's northeast and southwest.
How many k's are we talking about here from Freiberg?
From Freiburg to
Brits. Over three.
We're talking, yeah, 350 about.
Yeah, thereabout. Okay. The essence. Northwest. We have taken the further north, and we have taken the further south. 300 plus k's in between the two towns. Freiberg and the Brits. Yes. Yes. Yeah?
I'm with the Rustenburg.
Not necessarily, but I know that the department did, yeah. So we're trying to go to the periphery, and we're trying to cover where the department did not do its work. That is why we're asking them, in the Northern Cape, which areas did you touch? Brits, Honorable Teko, yesterday the minister called you what?
Tell.
Imam Sheikh Teng.
Yeah. Say, I was to go back to the issue of the Eastern Cape to say, when I was saying Buffalo City, East London in particular.
Buffalo City, East London.
Instead of that joker, and then you go to Chris Hani and you write Queenstown.
Free State, Lijeliputa, Welcome, and Bethlehem. Honorable Ramatlaka. Free State, Bethlehem, and Welcome. You're right.
No. I think
Chuba slow sisa wu. Switch on your mic.
Then we can go to Tabanchu, which is the side towards the border, and then you deal with the Welcome on the other side. So that's doable. You can write Tabanchu. So Tabanchu is a Moroka, the leave it as that.
Okay.
It's called Tabanchu is a town.
Tabanchu is a town. I wanted to check in which district does it fall. Anyway, they will find it.
They will find it.
The proposals that we are making is that we will deal with Swani, take the Sidibeng, but also in one of these 2 days, because we are knocking off at 13 hours, we will start in Soweto at 15 hours, at 17 hours. Probably it will be the first day. We finish Swani, then we go to Soweto from 17 hours, then we finish. In Limpopo, we're making a proposal that we take Mopani district, Giyani, and Waterberg Lephalale. And Sikukune, not Waterberg. We're removing Waterberg and replacing it with Mupani District, Giani Town. In Mpumalanga, we have said we agree with Ger Sibande, we will go to Bad Plus Elukwatini, and in Kangala, we will change Belfast to Witbank. Northwest, we have left it as is. Free State, we are saying we welcome, we will take Tabanchu as the second option. In the Eastern Cape, we say Buffalo City in East London, and the Chris Hani District Municipality will go to Queenstown. KZN, we said Port Shepstone is okay. We will go to Msunduzi in Ngungundlovu District. Western Cape, we said Estate of Worcester, we will go to George. We'll keep Worcester. Yeah. Oh yes, we'll keep Worcester, and then we will go to George, Estate of Beaufort West. Southern Cape District. Okay? And then the Northern Cape, I can't remember what we said with the Northern Cape. Kimberley and Calvinia Friedendal? Okay. Friedendal? Calvinia. Yeah. What in essence we are saying is that we can choose the venue to be Calvinia or Friedendal. The choice will be ours. They are close to one another. And then we will do Kimberley. Are the Honorable Humsinga? Okay. Are we agreeable to the dates as proposed here? Okay. Agreed for the dates as proposed. On that note, honorable members, I think we've done our job. Let me thank the RAF personnel who are here, officials from DOT. I've seen members of the community have, most of them left, but Law Society of Southern Africa is here. Is still here. Thank you very much. You can get the venues so that you can go and talk to your people. Honorable Humsinga, before the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. I just... thought of it yesterday, you might mention that you would announce the PRASA investigation schedule today, if there's any progress or that on or any indication in relation to this schedule, when that might commence. Thank you, Chair.
Valerie is not here. She was the one who was going to make a proposal based on the acceptance of this. It means in between we can be able to make a proposal sent to members, and if members so agree, then we can come into a committee and endorse, because it's a proposal that will be the first thing that honorable members we should do is to look at the terms of reference and say who are the organizations, individuals that we believe should be able to come and talk to the portfolio committee, and then we should be able to say, if this is the case, these are the organizations, institutions, individuals that we have identified, how can we be able to deal with that and then make proposals of dates. Probably it will be because this, as you look at it, it takes us away for the almost the whole 2 months, and then in September when we are here, we should be able to look into the proposal. And I think in between, I will request Valerie, because she's booked off sick, she's not well. When in between, we should be able to send you so that you can make inputs as to how can we handle that. It's not a one-man's show. We need to look into how we should deal with that. Once, I beg your indulgence, honorable members, because sometimes when we give you, it's a draft proposal or whatever, that you don't necessarily respond. I'm going to request you that in the eventuality we send you that this is the proposal of the individuals and organizations that we believe should come in. Please respond. When we make proposal of dates, please also respond. And that is what we will be doing in between as we are dealing with the public hearings of RAPS. Honorable Ramatlaka.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Just that reminder that I, if I remember, we have already adopted the terms of reference.
Yes.
So I think what, and we have identified the issues to be investigated. What would probably just outstanding that we have not identified individual if we were to go in institutions. That's what we could do in between. But perhaps to make our life much easier, it will be useful, given that the staff and the validate and them, they have the content, they could isolate some and make a proposal which you can take a much shorter time in agreeing with it, rather than to brainstorming around when we meet. So if they can make a proposal about institution who, then when we consider it, we consider it that way.
I thought I was putting it exactly the same way you're putting it. Are we agreeing that we definitely will be able to identify, Valerie and the team will identify the institutions and individuals who we believe should be able to make a presentation, but also assist us in terms of dealing with the dates of the program that we have put in place. If so, agreed, the meeting is adjourned.
Now I can rush to copy.